The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Some state lawmakers claim that Florida replicated what other states have done in the past, and they think it could happen again with this new abortion law. Now, an advocate for pro-life laws here in Florida says that lawmakers in Tallahassee are already looking at a new bill on abortion. In the meantime, people are already voicing their opinions on the Texas law. It bans most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy.
Anytime laws can protect children from being killed in their mother's womb, that's a good thing.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that is a good thing, huh? It's just common sense. I'm sure that child wants to be protected and defended. It's a good thing. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani, and you're a good thing. It's good to be here with you today. I like hanging out with you. It's good to be back. We have 3 hours, and boy, do we have some fun conversation ahead in just a few moments. One of the most brilliant men I have an opportunity to have an exchange with is a man named Professor Robert George, and he'll be stopping by. We'll tap into his genius in just a second, because there's something trending right now on social media, on Twitter, that I just want to make you aware of. It's very reflective of what's happening in the culture, and it's something that you, I think you'd appreciate knowing. This remark that you just heard is in response to this Texas abortion ban. I'm sure you probably heard about it if this is new to you. It's sent shockwaves to the left and to those who are part of the culture of death. Those who have been fighting for life, they rejoice. They see a victory here. And Texas has passed a fetal heartbeat bill, and it's going to protect children. It's making waves now throughout the country. Florida's legislators, they're looking at possibly introducing a similar piece of legislation, saying that they were encouraged when they heard what the Supreme Court did, the fact that the court didn't place, you know, a stay of implementation. And I think it's great. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday. If you missed any of my conversation on this, relevantradio.com, just go to my podcast, okay? Type in Drew Mariani. Look for my show. You'll find, you know, all the great conversations we've had over the past several weeks, in fact, several months. But we broke all this down. What does it mean? And there is great concern because it's going to send a shockwave that will travel across states in our union. And it's really a novel approach. Why and how? Well, it's novel because it has civilians filing lawsuits against those who aid and abet a woman in obtaining an abortion and the possibility of getting at least $10,000. That, you know, made the court say, "Hey, we couldn't do anything about it. We can't do anything about that." So the reason is that the Constitution only allows a court to go after state actors, not private citizens. So it is a clever approach. I mean, it really is a clever approach. And you could understand the reaction. Oh, my gosh. Nobody saw that coming. The governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, he said, you know, hey, I would welcome such a bill. I would love it. I would love it. You know, he says the Supreme Court's ruling wasn't a substantive one. He says so he may want to wait to see what the court does in the end. He may hold off a little bit, but he would welcome a bill. The reaction to the law on the left is really quite telling. And to put it very bluntly, to put it very directly, they're freaking out, right? They are freaking out. They are stunned, shocked. They are shell-shocked. They did not see this coming, and they thought, oh, my gosh, our sacred sacrament of abortion, you know, it's in trouble. We're going to lose it. Alexandra DeSancta, she pointed out, the phrase news outlets have been, well, they've been using, you know how, oh gosh, they've been using certain language to avoid saying fetal heartbeat, right? And I just love this. I want to pause for a second because I love words. I do. I love words. They're so powerful. They can, you know, move hearts. You know, they can change minds. You know, they're powerful in describing things. And if you look at the left, if you have to give them any props, any credit, they're brilliant. They have just done a wonderful job, the culture of death, at co-opting words and redefining words and reusing words and changing the language. Oh, my gosh, they're brilliant. I sit back as an observer of all things, right? I look at currents. I look at trends. I look at what people are doing. And I just thought, man, that's genius. I mean, that really is so clever on their part. So how do you get around fetal heartbeat, right? There's a fetal heartbeat bill. How do you get around that? I mean, what would you do? Well, check this out. They're saying cardiac rhythm. That's what? Cardiac rhythm, a group of cells with electrical activity, a cluster of pulsing cells, fetal pole cardiac activity, the pulsing of what will later become the fetus's heart. That's what they're saying. That's how they're defining this. Those are the lengths that they're going to hide the truth. That in itself is telling. I mean, don't you agree? I mean, just pull back. Sit on the sideline and just watch. Look at how they are reacting. That's the length that they're going to go to hide the truth. We can't say it is a fetal heartbeat. Heartbeat, no, you can't. If it's a fetus and has a heartbeat, that means we can't. No, don't say that. All right, well, we're going to say that it's a cluster of pulsing cells. It's a fetal pole cardiac activity. The pulsing of what will later become a fetus's heart. Come on. How ridiculous does this have to get? And I'm not kidding. That's what we're seeing. You know, one abortionist who's active on Twitter said this, and I'm going to quote. I want to quote them. They said this, quote, Texas isn't passing an abortion ban. It's not? Because Texas isn't passing an abortion ban. Texas is passing a reproductive coercion law. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's so ridiculous. It's funny. It's so ridiculous. It's outrageous. I mean, it's outrageous. No, they're not passing an abortion ban. They're passing a reproductive coercion law. Don't you love words? It's anti-choice, right? Don't you love the words? Government-sanctioned reproductive coercion. That's the garble that comes out of that mouth, right? Here's another one. A different side of the forced sterilization coin. This is fascism, the person says on Twitter. This is eugenics. This is tyranny. This is the destruction of democracy in the United States of America. You see what I mean by freaking out? You see what I mean? You see the reaction? I mean, come on. I find it entertaining almost. I find it sad. Don't get me wrong. I find it tragic too. And when I do this, as shocked as I am by their reaction, I still call you to pray. And I want to do that every day. It's really important. You know, the White House spokesperson, Jen Psaki. Let me call her spokeswoman because she's a woman, right? Not a spokesperson. I'll call her a spokeswoman. But she doesn't speak for all women, right? That's what she says. She snapped at a reporter from EWTN yesterday. This reporter asked her, and what a great question. And I want to say bravo because, you know, it takes some gumption to do this. He asked Psaki, how does President Biden, how does he reconcile his support for abortion with his Catholic faith? How do you do that? Oh, my gosh. You talk about a fastball. You know, how does the president reconcile supporting the destruction of innocent human lives? I'll translate that, okay? Let me use my words now to explain what he's saying. How does the president, who is supposedly Catholic, want to throw the powers of the federal government and everything he can to make sure that the most vulnerable amongst us, those innocent children in the womb, can be destroyed? How can we legalize and codify and enshrine and sanction that? That's the question. How does the president reconcile his support for abortion with his Catholic faith? How do you do that? Well, she reiterated, Biden believes it's a woman's choice. And then she went on to say this, listen.
Why does the president support abortion when his own Catholic faith teaches abortion is morally wrong?
Well, he believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
Who does he believe then should look out for the unborn child?
He believes that it's up to a woman to make those decisions, and up to a woman to make those decisions with her doctor. I know you've never faced those choices, nor have you ever been pregnant, but for women out there who have faced those choices, this is an incredibly difficult thing. The president believes their rights should be respected. Go ahead. I think we got to move on. I think we have to move on. You've had plenty of time today. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. We got to move on. I don't want to talk anymore about this. Go ahead. We got to move on. You had enough time. Let's go. Move on. Yeah, I don't like this question. It's awkward and it makes me feel uncomfortable. Look, she does not speak for all women. She doesn't speak for all women. And, you know, let's zoom out and let's use her own language too. How does she know what his sexuality is, you know, or his gender, right? She looks at him. She assumed he was a man. He had a deep voice, right? I would probably bet he's a man. I probably think she's right, but do you know what he identifies as, right? Do you know what he identifies at? Maybe he's a chest-feeding, you know, individual, right? I mean, look at the language that the left wants to use, and yet they don't use it in these situations. It's absolutely bizarre. You know, there was a commentator who pointed out that, and he says, how does she know, you know, she didn't misgender him? I think that's brilliant, you know? He could be a gestator. Yeah, you know, this is the insanity. The insanity of where we are. You know, the Catholic Vote was reporting that Bishop Thomas Tobin of Providence, Rhode Island, he went after the president saying this on Twitter. He says, devout Catholic Joe Biden continues to fervently support and promote the death of unborn children in abortion. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement. It's pretty direct. And the bishop put quotes around devout Catholic, you know, those quotes, so... obviously, he can't be a devout Catholic if you're going to be diametrically opposed to what the church teaches and believes regarding the sanctity of life. You know, as you heard a little bit, we've been talking about the left is going nuts over this Texas abortion bill, but I want to read you also a little snippet, if I can, of the apoplexy that you're going to find online, okay? There's a really interesting, actually, I would argue, frightening trend going on Twitter right now. The phrase Down syndrome, and maybe you have a Down syndrome child, right? Beautiful, beautiful children. They give so much love. Maybe your child's born with Down. The phrase was trending on Twitter. You know why? No, there wasn't anything in the news about someone with Down syndrome. It's not March 21st, which is Down Syndrome Day. No, none of those. Listen to this. I'll share the tweet. You can't screen for Down syndrome before about 10 weeks, and something like 80% of Down syndrome fetuses are aborted. If red states ban abortion, we could see a world where they have five times as many children with Down syndrome and similar numbers for other disabilities. Could be outliers in the whole developed world. There are already negative stereotypes of Americans in these states, and one can imagine it getting even more extreme. What if they also ban genetic engineering and embryonic, selection, while other places go ahead? Will they maintain their belief in a small safety net and lower government spending in such a world? Would liberals change their minds about government spending if it ends up going to states that have much higher costs due to these laws? That's from a guy who is the president of the Center for Study and Partisanship and Ideology, which makes what he wrote up, I think, just a piece of self-parody, really, if you think about it. Anyway, Professor Robert George of Princeton, he responded. And I always love him. If you follow him on Twitter, you'll be enlightened. He's usually pretty profound and erudite. He joins us today to give us some perspective. Professor, thank you for all that you do on so many different fronts, and thank you for your time. I know how valuable it is.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, thank you, Drew. It's a pleasure to be back on the show.
Boy, a lot of sanity unfolding in the culture, isn't it? From the reaction to the Texas abortion, ban to the things that people on Twitter are concerned about. I know you responded online to that Down syndrome tweet. Share with us, would you, if you could, your thoughts.
Well, I opened my Twitter and along the right-hand column where Twitter indicates what words or phrases are appearing most on Twitter, they refer to that as trending. I saw that a phrase trending was Down syndrome. So I wondered, well, what's causing the phrase Down syndrome to trend today? Has there been some new scientific development, some new therapy? What's going on here? And when I clicked the phrase Down syndrome, I saw the very quotation, the very Twitter thread, as we call them, that you read to your audience, followed by a lot of commentary, pro and con, people supporting the point of view that person articulated and people criticizing it. Well, I was pretty appalled to see that. So I responded with a little Twitter thread of my own. I said, why is Down syndrome trending on Twitter? Because some people are arguing we need permissive abortion laws so that we can screen for people with Down syndrome and kill them in utero. So wrong. No member of the human family is inherently superior or inferior to any other. And then, Drew, I followed that tweet up with a reminder. My next tweet was, sometimes it's worth remembering that what came to be known as the Holocaust did not begin with the murder of Jews or Slavs or Romani, the gypsies. It began with the killing of the disabled and the cognitively impaired. They were regarded as, quote, useless eaters, unquote, and declared Lebensunwertes Leben, that is, in English, lives unworthy of life. And then I followed again. The ideology that held Down syndrome people and others to be lives unworthy of life did not originate with the Nazis. It predated the rise of Nazism. Its architects were sophisticated, urbane, progressive people. The legal scholar Carl Binding, the famous German legal scholar, and the medical specialist Alfred Hoche, I'm referring to the two men, a law professor and a medical specialist, who wrote a book called Lives Unworthy of Life, where they advocated the killing of people they regarded as inferior physically or genetically. And then I followed that up. Claiming that we are eliminating Down syndrome by killing people with Down syndrome, so long as we catch them early enough, is like claiming that we are eliminating poverty by killing poor people. It is barbaric, and the very thought of us, the very thought of it should fill us with revulsion. And then I finally concluded with one sentence. Don't be the person who will someday utter those four dreadfully sad words. But I was silent.
Right.
And there, Drew, I'm pleading with my readers, and I'm pleading with your listeners, do not be the person who passes over in silence this latest assault on the dignity and value and equality of our cognitively disabled brothers and sisters, whether they have Down syndrome, whether they're suffering from dementias in older age, no matter what the impairment is, and again, whether it's cognitive or whether it's a physical disability, don't be the person who will someday say, while the attack on their dignity was occurring, I sat silently by. We need to speak. We need to speak to our neighbors. We need to speak to our family. We need to write letters to the editor. We need to have our voice out there defending that core principle of our civilization and those of us who are Christian, of our faith, Christians and Jews. And that's the idea that each and every human being is a creature fashioned in the very image and likeness of God, is the bearer of profound, inherent, and equal dignity. There are no inferiors and superiors. We do not regard and must not regard people who are stronger or smarter or more beautiful as superior in fundamental dignity and worth to people who are not any of those things. We are all, in the words of the Declaration of Independence, created equal.
You know, Professor, I always say I love talking to you. You have such eloquence and such clarity and such rationality with what you say. And I sit back here, though, and I look at the lack of rationality, the incredible disorientation that we're seeing in the culture. And I wonder, I mean, we look back at Margaret Sanger and you think, gosh, this woman was a eugenicist, right? And I sit here and I said, how does a society, because we're seeing it today, I mean, it's playing out right there in Twitter, and exactly what you said, how does a society slowly move from, how do they move to accept and see as justifiable the extermination of the vulnerable, the disabled, those that they see as to not have equal worth? How do we get to that point? What are the factors that drive that to the point where we think it's okay to exterminate a Down syndrome child or somebody else that has some other, malady?
Well, Drew, the theological explanation, of course, is sin.
Yeah.
It's original sin. It's been with us from very nearly the beginning. We get that principle of the inherent and equal dignity of each and every member of the human family from the book of Genesis. In fact, the very first chapter of the book of Genesis, which, as you know, is the very first book in the Bible. And it's where we're taught, it's revealed that God made us, all of us, made man in his very image and likeness. But throughout human history, And even among Jews and Christians, the people of the book, the people to whom that revelation was given, it has always been difficult. We have always found it difficult because of our weakness, because of our selfishness, because of our sin, to actually live with the moral implications of regarding all people as created equal. And so, you know, we have engaged in conquest and domination. Through most of human history, we had slavery, even in Christian societies. Somehow, although we would say with our mouths, all men are created equal, although we would say everyone is made in the image and likeness of God, we wouldn't live up to that. And in some of those areas, we've made progress. Thank God we've abolished slavery. We've even abolished de jure, legal segregation, and so forth. And yet, while we've made progress in some areas, we have regressed in others. We have lost our respect for the unborn child as a creature made in the image of God. We've lost our respect for the cognitively disabled and some physically disabled people. We've come to treat people as if they are to be evaluated and ranked on the basis of strength or beauty or intellectual skill or accomplishment or status or wealth or what have you. And even when it comes to eugenics, the point you made is so important, Drew. Eugenics, well, this was practiced by the Nazis, even though they didn't introduce it. It was introduced by the progressives, even before the rise of the Nazis. But the Nazis showed us what can be done with it, ultimately in the Holocaust, the murder of millions and millions of people. And yet, did we learn the lesson? Did we learn that we should feel revulsion at the very thought of eugenics? Well, evidently not, because we still find people today supporting the idea that it's perfectly okay, indeed desirable, to kill a child in the womb if that child is disabled, if that child has Down syndrome, if that child may be born missing a limb. This is dreadful, and we need to fight against it with all our might, in our own hearts as well as in the political culture.
So I guess as I sit here, a lot of people wonder, what do we do? I mean, it seems that the tide is rising. How do we eradicate or at least change this kind of thinking that seems so prevalent right now and it's being advocated?
I'll tell you how you do it. You speak to anyone who will listen. Our problem, Drew, is silence. Too many people are silent. They know the truth. They believe the truth. They believe in the equal dignity of all human beings, every member of the human family. They know that it's appalling and terribly wrong to kill a child, whether in the womb or out of the womb, because that child has Down syndrome. And yet most are silent. Why are they silent? Because of fear. They fear being called a name. They fear being thought less of. They fear being criticized by their workmates or their friends or their schoolmates if they stand up and speak out for what they know to be true. We have to overcome that. Our job, especially those of us who are Christians, our job is to bear faithful witness in season and out of season. When it's easy, today it's pretty easy to stand up against slavery. There aren't too many people defending it. So we can speak out of it. It still happens. It still occurs. Human trafficking especially of women and girls in slavery, still occurs. And we should be speaking out against it. And when we do, it's pretty safe. No one criticizes us for it. But we need to be able to speak out when it's not safe, when it's not easy, when we will get criticized, when we will get vilified for speaking the truth in love, speaking truth to power, including cultural and economic power. So let's no longer be silent, Drew. Let's encourage everyone to speak.
Amen to that. I just wonder where this leads. If we do not do that, Professor, where do you think that this could ultimately end up? Will you see the government taking greater control, perhaps asking women to go ahead and to be tested for their pregnancies? You know, who knows? I'm just brainstorming here as to what might happen. I hope it doesn't get to that point.
Well, this much we know.
Would the government pick up on this and end up seeing a woman forced to undergo tests and abortions?
This much we know. There are things done today that in my boyhood, even in my young adulthood, I did not imagine were possible.
Yeah, I agree.
So we don't know where this goes. There are things that we cannot imagine happening that might end up happening.
Yeah.
Certainly, it's easy to argue. There are people who even today argue that bringing a disabled child into the world when you knew about the disability in utero is a form of child abuse because that child will suffer. There are people who argue that bringing a disabled child into the world is wrong, morally wrong, unjust, because that child will become a drain on public resources or a difficulty for other people. Now, it's a very short step from that corrupt belief to the idea that the government should stop the child abuse by requiring the killing of the child in the womb, or that the government should prevent a child from being born who will be a drain on the public treasury or on public resources. So yes, all of that is possible. No one should ever say it could never happen or it could never happen here. It could happen, Drew, and it could happen here.
Well, Professor, I want to thank you for being there in the public square, bringing truth and reason and beauty. We need that. And I'm grateful for your time, as always. If people want to follow you on Twitter, correct me if I'm wrong, it's at McCormick Prof. That's your Twitter handle?
Yeah, at McCormick Prof. Or just look up my name, Robert P. George, on Twitter, and you'll find at McCormick Prof.
That sounds great. At McCormick Prof. Professor,
thank you. Can I also mention my website? I now have my personal website available.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
It is really a war against the child, a direct killing of the innocent child, murder by the mother herself. And if we accept that the mother can kill even her own child, how can we tell other people not to kill one another? How do we persuade a woman not to have an abortion? As always, we must pursue her with love, and we remind ourselves that love means to be willing to give until it hurts. Jesus gave even his life to love us. So the mother who is thinking of abortion should be helped to love. That is, to give until it hurts, her plans, her free time, to respect the life of her child. For the child is the greatest gift of God to the family, because it has been created to love and to be loved.
Wow, such profound words, such profound insight, and it comes from the heart of deep sanctity. That was Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And this weekend, we remember her. Her feast day is this Sunday. She died in 1997, so you can do the math. I can't believe it's been that long already. That's amazing. And that clip, believe it or not, took place, I think it was about 3 years before she died. It was 1994 she said that. One other thing she said, too, that I thought was very telling. She said that the fruit of abortion is nuclear war. I mean, think about those words for just a moment, right? Just think about those words. Profound. Haunting. Prescient, prophetic in some respect. And look at the battle we are in right now. Why? Because Satan hates life. He hates the family, you know. And you see this playing out. We just spoke with Professor Robert George. We talked about this movement now to eradicate Down syndrome children, and people on the left and in the culture of death are just they're wild over this Texas bill and the thought of other states maybe taking a chapter out of Texas's playbook and implementing it there. And You see the wildness that's now unfolding. Hey, if you want to follow Professor George, he was giving a website as we were going to break there, and you might have missed it. It's robertpgeorge.com, robertpgeorge.com. And as I said, one of the most brilliant men I know. I'm humbled, you know, I sit at the feet of his genius. I mean, he's a great guy, a clear thinker. I was telling my next guest, Dan Hendershot, who's going to be stopping by here in just a second, you know, I really wish that somebody would nominate him for the Supreme Court. And, you know, he might have gotten a nod from Trump, but he was kind of an anti-Trumper, if you remember, back in 2016. At the time, he wasn't pro-Hillary. I want to be clear about that, too, right? I want to make sure we're clear about that. But, you know, there were other candidates and other things that were unfolding at that particular time. But he's a clear thinker, and follow him both on Twitter. Check out his website. You'll be glad. I'll tell you one other thing, okay, since we're talking about the what I like to call disorientation, a mass confusion. that's going on in our culture right now. A spiritual war and attack. 6 years ago, Disney did a live remake of the 1950 animated classic, and you've seen it, I'm sure, many times, Cinderella, right? What a classic. What a great story. It surprised critics, though. Did really well at the box. Kenneth Branagh's film was pretty straightforward interpretation of the story. There were a few twists of female empowerment thrown in, but you know it didn't mar the film at all. But you know, fairy tales are dynamic things, and they're always reimaginations of them. People always want to represent them. The latest one can be found on Amazon Prime. I don't know if you have that or not, or if you heard about this. Unfortunately, it's an update, not worth watching. No story that you know gets touched these days can get past the transgender crowd without a remake, right? And that's true for this one as well. There's an actor, a guy named Billy Porter, who's playing the fairy godmother. Yeah, Billy Porter is playing the fairy godmother. He is, as my next guest wrote, and there's a great column at Crisis Magazine written by Ann Hendershot. We're going to talk about it. He's portraying the fairy godmother as a young gay man wearing a ball gown, high heels, and carrying a magic wand. I mean, Walt Disney would probably turn over his grave. That's not what he wanted to illustrate. Porter said in an interview that, you know, magic has no gender. And we're presenting this character as genderless. Of course, doesn't make sense, right? She's the fairy godmother, M-O-T-H-E-R, right? She's the godmother, not the fairy godparent. They didn't write it that way, did they? Words again, right? The god person. It doesn't make a difference to the producers of the show. They're out to remake kids' understanding of gender and sex. Our kids are the ones that are in the crosshair of this ideology, of this agenda. We've talked about it before. It's about the destruction of the family, the building block of society. That is what this is all about. And it percolated very innocuously at first, but now it's very obvious. It's in your face. You can't hide it now, right? How do I interpret that? No, it's in your face right now. They're out to remake the thinking of your kids. You're the primary educator of your kids. And yet they are now, they said, no, we don't like what you're teaching them. We want to reshape their understanding of gender and sex, and we're going to use every trick in the book to do it. We're going to use the power of imagination. We're going to use the power of the media and the entertainment industry. We're going to use all the tricks that we have up our sleeves. As Ann Hendershot said at Crisis, and we'll try to link over to this article for you to make it easy. You'll find it on Twitter at Drew Mariani Show or on Facebook.com. Porter, she says this, quote, Porter and the LGBTQ community know the power of the fairy tale. And this is why they're attempting to reshape it into their own image. They can't allow children to embrace the idea of love between a man and a woman as being natural. They can't have children seeing that falling in love and getting married is normal. Billy Porter and the LGBTQ community among Sony's biggest supporters know that distorting the beauty, they know that distorting a beautiful fairy tale like Cinderella, it needs to occur in order to promote the deviant and destructive ideology that gender is a choice and not a gift from God. I don't think you can say it any clearer than that. And I want to thank Dr. Ann Hendershot. She's a sociologist, professor at Franciscan University of Steubenville, for her eloquence and for coming out and writing about something I think is really important and for all of us to know. She joins me now. Doctor, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Oh, thanks, Drew. I'm happy to be on, not happy to be talking about this. And I hate to sound like I'm outraged because I tend not to get outraged. It's just that I love fairy tales.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't want to be outraged, but I'm really sad about this one because I loved The Last Cinderella. I just loved it from Disney. And I was so happy that Disney had done such a pure and wonderful presentation. And this one is so awful. This is not Disney's fault. This is Sony.
Yep.
And this one mocks Christians by distorting and creating this deviant godmother. I mean, godmother, you're distorting that, and you're mocking God by creating a man as a godmother. So you're mocking mothers, you're mocking God, and you're mocking gender. And they know that. They know what they're doing, and they think the kids are ready. There's a Billy Porter,
yep,
who is a very engaging, entertaining young man. who always crosses gender boundaries whenever he can. He was on PBS on Sesame Street wearing a dress just a few months ago. But anyway, he had a quote saying, "I think the new generation is really ready. You know, the kids are ready. It's the grown-ups that are slowing stuff down."
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Wow.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, darn right. And I hope we're successful in that attempt to defend what God has oriented and created. You know, I guess it shouldn't surprise us, though, Doctor, that fairy tales would come under assault like this. But, you know, to go to the tale that Disney told, just as I pointed out 6 years ago, to the one that Amazon is now releasing today, it's a huge change in direction. So what happened? Are things accelerating right now? And why a story like this, and why so radical? I mean, give me your take on that. What do you think is driving
this? Well, progressives will go as far as they can, and people aren't paying attention. There's so much going on right now. They're not paying attention. I mean, I think there were lots of women that allowed their children to go to drag queen story time and thought it was just a funny, entertaining thing. They didn't see the danger in that. And these drag queens have visited schools. So I think people aren't paying attention. I know how busy they are. And I know, and I think even me writing this article, I'm sure there's some will say, "Oh, he just has a small role in it. What's the big deal? Why do you need to make such a big deal out of everything?" And I'm, you know, I have to agree with them. I don't want to spoil the party, but this is not a party. Fairy tales are very important to children. And Billy Porter knows that, and the gay community knows that, the GLBTQ. I don't want to say the whole gay community is responsible
right.
for this.
Right, I agree.
But the transgender lobby is responsible for this. And fairy tales are really important because they reveal truths about ourselves and the world, and they help kids make some sort of sense of the world. You know, these children, young children, fairy tales have always helped them find meaning in their lives. And when you distort them like this, you are doing children a grave disservice, really. There's a reason. Grimm's fairy tales, even though they can be grim, they always have a message, and the message operates in the unconscious, offering children these solutions to problems they don't even know they have. And so children can be empowered. Now, this latest Cinderella, it isn't just the gender problem. Cinderella herself is becoming a feminist, and her stepmother really isn't evil. She just was stymied in her piano playing by an evil patriarchal culture. So it's all the white male's fault, really.
Yep.
And that's where what this is all about. It's just a crazy, crazy story.
My guest today is Dr. Ann Hendershot. She wrote a great piece. You'll find it at Crisis. We also will link over to it. I'm going to take a short pause, Doctor. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more. I'm going to give you a chance to get in. If you have a question, if you've read something or saw something, you want to share your own perspective. Maybe it's frustration. Maybe you have a solution. Give me a quick buzz. And we have Dr. Ann Hendershot for a short time today. The number is 888-914-9149. You can call in now. 888-914-9149. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Drew Mariani Show. Listen in to the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I wanted to call and report a miraculous recovery.
Where we're here for you.
Weeks and weeks with no improvement.
Every afternoon at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific.
Now he's home.
On Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Cinderella, Cinderella, night and day at Cinderella. Make the fire, fix the breakfast, wash the dishes, do the mopping, and the sweeping, and the dusting. They always keep her hopping. She'd go around in circles till she's very, very dizzy. Still they holler, "Keep her busy, Cinderella."
Yeah, that's a classic, isn't it? I mean, you've probably seen Cinderella, your kids, maybe even your grandkids, if you have them. One of the great works of Disney. My call screener, Patrick Alog, just told me, Patrick, open your mic for a second. I am absolutely shocked. You have never seen
Cinderella. I've never seen any Disney animated film from beginning to end until Little Mermaid. Besides that, never seen any Disney animated film from beginning to end. I've seen clips of it. I was the one who came up with the idea for the song. I knew the song.
Your mom listens to the show, right?
I watched. I was a weird kid. I watched like sports and news and stuff like that.
I want to talk to you. What? You
didn't show my mom didn't grow up in America. Didn't grow up in America.
That's
so,
true. She's an immigrant. She's Filipino.
Yeah.
And Patrick's one of those people who did not see it. I saw it. My kids have seen it. A lot of you have. It's a classic. Disney has put out some great fairy tales. Many of these have such great, morals to them as well. And yet we're seeing them redefined in the culture. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking today with Dr. Ann Hendershot from Steubenville. She wrote a book, by the way. You might want to check this out. It's called The Politics of Envy. We'll talk to her about it. But she's taking a look at what's happening. You know, Disney's tale of Cinderella has been broadcast. It's been reimagined. There's been plays. I mean, it's just a great story. Amazon Prime came out, and they are redefining it. If you're just joining me, they are now giving it a transgender remake, and they've got an actor named Billy Porter playing the fairy godmother. And this man will be, wearing a ball gown and high heels and carrying a magic wand. And kids are going to see this. And look, I think kids are very malleable. The kids are very confused. They're very impressionable. And this only adds, I think, confusion to their lives. And it's not the part, there's an ideological movement going on in our country right now. And they understand how important it is to get the kids at that age. If you can get them young, you're going to own them. And doctor, let's pick up on that point there as well, because you and I were talking during the break that even Sesame Street, another classic that a lot of people have had, has now is it a regular character in that? Where's it dressed? Tell me what's going on Sesame Street.
It was set up. Well, I think there was a gay character, but in terms of the transgender issue, most recently, Billy Porter was a guest on Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. Now, Sesame Street is for preschoolers, 2, 3, 4 year olds. And he was a visitor. Billy Porter wore a dress on Sesame Street. He's clearly a man. He looks like a man. Children know he's a man.
Yeah, right.
But he wore a dress on the show. In fact, he wore the dress that he wore to the Oscars. So he's trying to really address the younger crowd now.
Right.
But the fairy tale is the one that bothers me the most, because Cinderella is such a beautiful story. And it's a very moral story, in many ways a Christian story. Chesterton once said that the lesson of Cinderella is the same as the Magnificat, that God lifted up the humble.
Yeah.
And that is true. Cinderella was humble. Now, in this remake of Cinderella, she becomes very arrogant. She becomes a feminist. She wears a power suit. I mean, there's everything wrong with this.
A different story.
Absolutely everything. Yeah, it's not. And the Disney, as much as people criticize Disney, some of those movies were just beautiful, the animated ones. The Fairy Godmother was a loving mother. Cinderella didn't have a loving mother, and the Fairy Godmother took that place. And now you have Billy Porter, who is not a loving mother in any way. So it's such a distortion. The evil stepmother is not evil. She's just misunderstood, and she was stymied in her feminist desires to be a musician. And the ugly stepsisters weren't evil and envious, because, in my book, I talk about, in The Politics of Envy, I talk about the envy woven throughout Cinderella. The stepmother's envious of Cinderella because she has the love of her father. The stepsisters are envious of Cinderella. None of that is in this show, in this new Amazon remake. Nobody's really evil. Everybody's just kind of misunderstood, and women are marginalized. It's a feminist morality play.
Well, that's a different story to me, that's for sure. Judy is listening in Minnesota. Judy, thanks for calling in. Good afternoon.
Hi. It was just I was reading today, because it's a topic I want to discuss because I have young grandchildren. But I read today that Disney introduced their first non-binary character this July 24th.
Wow.
And the character's name is Rain Whispers, and she's part of some series called Owl House. I'm not familiar with any of these things, but this is they premiered their first non-binary character. And the other thing that took me to was Walt Disney used to, when they were introducing their fireworks at night, would always introduce ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, greetings from the firework, whatever.
Right.
But now they no longer say that. Now they say good evening, dreamers of all ages.
Okay.
So Disney is really on a roll.
Judy, thank
you. Erasing gender. Yeah, thanks, Judy. Right. I did not know about the new non-binary character. I appreciate knowing about that. Thank you.
So, I mean, what a great call and what great insight. The first non-binary character just this late July introduced by Walt Disney. You're synthesize this for me, if you could. Summarize it. Make it clear. Give me this in a snapshot. I mean, why are we seeing so much of this right now? And what's the end goal in all this?
Transgender is ascendant right now. It absolutely is. We had a conference at Franciscan 2 years ago called The Transgender Moment, and we highlighted Ryan Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally.
Yeah.
Well, it's become so much worse since then. We're doing a parental rights conference at Franciscan in October, and I would invite a lot of your listeners, if you'd like to attend, you're welcome to attend. We're having a pediatrician who's, she's wonderful. I think you've had her on your show, talking about the transgender moment.
Who's that, Meg Meeker?
Critella.
Critella, okay.
Isn't it Dr. Critella?
Yep.
Yes. She's great. Because she talks about how she's being pressured by parents of 3 to 5 year olds who are convinced that their child is in the wrong body, trapped in the wrong body, which is so crazy. And we're fortunate in the Catholic Church and Christians of all many persuasions know that this is nonsense. But there's a huge lobby right now, a transgender lobby, and they're infiltrating everything and reaching down into preschool age children now. So it's really kind of a dangerous thing.
You know, this kind of stuff is going to keep happening. I've talked about how it was very subtle at first. Now it's very much in your face, and it gets worse as it goes. You know, we have a moment or two left. The Christian response to this. I mean, there's always an antidote to this sickness. What is it, and what should our response be?
Well, with raising children, I think it's read the original fairy tales. The Brothers Grimm are very moral tales. They give sort of guideposts for children. You know, good people are rewarded, bad people are punished in fairy tales. They always end with that kind of ending. I mean, in Cinderella, the ugly stepsisters got their eyes pecked out by crows in the original one because of their duplicitous behavior, you know.
That's
maybe
so
you don't want to read that one to your children, but not a bad idea to at least tell them that bad people are punished and good people are rewarded, because that's pretty much what God tells us.
That's so true. Doctor, thank you for all that you do. Your article, of course, is at Crisis. We're going to link over to it. Your book, The Politics of Envy. What's the best way to get that?
And that's a crisis book, but you can get it on Amazon.
All right. So it's an easy way to find that. And just type in Dr. Ann Hendershot, and that's H-E-N-D-E-R-S-H-O-T-T. And the book is Politics of Envy. We'll catch up again, Doctor. Thank you. Enjoy your weekend, okay? You got it.
You too. Thank you.
All right, it's Dr. One of my favorites. Two all-stars today, you know, Professor Robert George and Dr. Hendershot. I love them both. And I love praying with you. We're going to do that coming up in a few minutes. So you might want to get on the phone or send somebody a tweet or a text and just say, hey, we're going to pray the chapel. Let's pray for our country. Let's pray for parents. I'm kind of glad that my kids aren't in grade school, that they're not exposed to this type of stuff. I think it's even more difficult for you young parents today who have to deal with this, you future parents. That's why I want to bring you truth. I want to speak it in love. I want you to do what you can. I want you to understand that this is also a very spiritual thing. And, something that can be engaged in on a spiritual level as well. I have a moment or two left. We were talking about Mother Teresa when I first came on. Her anniversary is this weekend, and I believe she died in 97. And since we're going to pray the chaplet, you know, so often saints, in order to achieve the level of blessed, beatified, they need a miracle, and then they need another one to become canonized. So, and these have to defy scientific explanation, right? They have to pass a very strict criteria, both by the medical community and then by the church. And the miracle attributed to Mother Teresa is pretty incredible. There was a Brazilian man with a viral brain infection. And as a result of this infection, he had multiple abscesses and ended up with some sort of I think it was some hydrocephalus of some sort. And it basically built up a fluid on the brain. So in December of 2008, the patient was in a coma, was dying. The wife continually sought the intercession of Mother Teresa. Never forgot her, continued to pray with her. That was, early December. On the 9th of that month, they were going to do a last-ditch surgery. And she ran to church. She went to Our Lady. And she went and she knelt down and she begged Mother Teresa for your cure. She begged her, please, Mother Teresa, you're with God. Heal. Just heal my husband. That prayer reached the throne of God. 30 minutes after the patient arrived in the OR, the doctor found the patient was awake and without pain. And he asked the doctor, what am I doing here? The man went on to resume his work as a mechanical engineer without limitation. And that is the power of God's healing touch. And that is the power of a prayer from the heart. That's the power also of the intercession of the saints. I'm so proud to be Catholic. I love my faith. I love those who've given us these heroic examples like Mother Teresa of Calcutta and John Paul and St. Faustina. And you go through the litany of the saints, right? I'm so glad that you and I, today, as we're making our way towards our eternal home, can pray together for each other and seek those same miracles. Let's pray the chaplet when I return.